Once again, my name is Russell. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Russell.
I am a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink. You know, there's that old joke, the Texas joke, where one guy says, I haven't found necessary to have a drink, you know, in 20 years. And the other guy says, well, Joe, I saw you drunk last night. He says, yeah, but it wasn't necessary. Well, I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful to God for that and to Alcoholics Anonymous, some wonderful men and sponsors I met in here. And it's a real privilege to be here with you guys in the upper room. I don't know, do they still call it the upper room?
Yeah.
In the North Miami group. And I remember 25 years ago, I was doing the steps here, and B. Whipple and what was her husband's name? Was it Don?
Bill.
Bill Whipple and B. Whipple were here, and they took me into the corner and explained to me how addicts were overrunning AA, and I had to do something. I don't know what I had to do, but I had to protect AA at all costs. I don't know whether I was successful or not, so I'm not in charge of that deal. But I have fond memories of the upper room, and I believe you were in a different location at that time. But hey, the room still has the same aura around it. It is one of the oldest groups in Dade County, and it's always a privilege to get to share my experience, strength, and hope with people. And this is my deal. This is my experience. You don't have to agree with it or disagree, it's just my deal. I'm just going to try to be as honest and transparent as possible. At these prices, there's no sense in lying anyway, you know. I mean, it would take too much time and effort to make it up. I'll just let it rip. And, you know, this is step one. We're starting on step one, which, you know, there's a possibility I might actually talk about step one. It's a slim one, but it's possible. And it may happen. But, I mean, you know, look, as I said, once again, at these prices, you know, you're lucky I show up fully clothed. So that's the deal. So, you know, my sponsor used to say, I'm going to talk about my experience with this thing. And, you know, my sponsor used to say, Russ, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And so I'm just going to tell you about, you know, how I stayed sober for 30 years without blowing my brains out or murdering somebody and drinking and all that sort of stuff, and we'll try to get through this deal. I have a certain, you know, I have prejudices, and I have opinions, and I have all sorts of stuff going on, and I think sometimes I'm a little controversial. You know, what does it say? It says in AA we try to avoid controversy. I don't try to avoid it, but you know, there are some things that are controversial. I have certain, after 30 years, you know, I'm going to talk about how I did it, and I did it a certain way, and I don't, I guess what it is I, you know, I try to be respectful of people, but I don't sugarcoat it. I mean, I'm just pretty direct about the whole deal, and you don't have to agree with me, and you know, the way AA works. I mean, many times I've walked out of AA meetings ticked off at the speaker. You know, he said something that bothered me. And, you know, my whole life is, after you've been around for 30 years, you've been around long enough so that you've seen things come full. You've seen a lot of people come full circle, you know. And I don't know how many people who come up to me and they have the same line. I don't know where they get this line from. I used to hate you, but now I love you, you know. So, you know, and I used to hate people and then I loved them, you know. And I found out the people that I hated that I ran away from would tell me the truth and I didn't want to hear it. Because I didn't want to accept it, because I had a lot of old ideas that it conflicted with. You know, I could buy into the alcohol deal, and I even fought that a little bit. But, you know, all the other stuff that they wanted me to give up, like love of, were other things I was addicted to, and I didn't even know I was addicted to them. And I'm going to talk mostly about that other stuff, because we don't have any alcohol problems in here. And after you get sober, you know, I don't know whether you realize this, you know, the two main deals about AA. Number one, in order to get here, you have to drink. Did you know that? It's true.
Yeah.
In order to get here, you need to drink.
I know that.
But once you get here, you're supposed to stop. So, you know, once you're here, you're supposed to stop. So now that you stop drinking, we're going to talk about some other things that are more important than drinking or not drinking. You know, because you know something? If you haven't figured out the drinking thing, the best way you can figure that out is you need to go out and drink again. You see, I've already said something that pissed somebody off. How can he say that? Well, do you really think if somebody's going to go out and drink again, they're going to go out and drink because I said so? Listen, I came in here, I wanted to stop drinking. You couldn't blow me out of this thing with dynamite. I heard all sorts of stuff that pissed me off, that got me mad, that I wanted to kill people, and you know, I didn't drink. I wasn't going to drink. You know why? Because I was scared of the drink. Because because in this deal, you're going to hear all sorts of stuff that conflicts with every rule in the book, and every it's so counterintuitive. You're a sponsor, and people are going to tell you things. You're going to hear things that just frost you. And God is only the least of the stuff you're going to hear. You're going to hear some other stuff. It's going to drive you nuts. And I'm telling you something. If every time you get pissed off, you're going to drink, it really has nothing to do with logic. It has to do with whether or not you want to stay sober or not. And I can do a lot of things, but I can't give somebody the desire to stay sober. I can't give somebody the desire to grow up and not be a 50 or 60-year-old man with the maturity of a 5-year-old. I can't give people that deal. That's got to come from God or someplace else. And I also know, being around here long enough, that a lot of people aren't going to get that deal. That doesn't bother me, or it does not bother me. I try to do my best to help other people, but I'm not responsible. I'm responsible for carrying the message. I'm not responsible for carrying you. You're big boys and girls. You're responsible for that. If you don't want to grow up, that's your business. And I'm perfectly happy. I'll tell you something. If I'm not pissing off 25% of the people I'm speaking to, I'm not saying anything. You're not talking. You know, people just nodding their head, you know. I want people walking down here saying, I can't believe that son of a bitch. Thinking about me for 6 weeks. Pissed off at me, you know, wanting to kill me. Because I know how AA works. Because I did that. And the way it works is like this. You're pissed off at somebody and it drives you nuts, and you go to sleep thinking about them, you wake up thinking about them, and you go nuts, and after a while, you know, you can't keep on thinking about them because you got a resentment and it's driving you nuts, and you know if you don't get rid of it, you're going to drink, so you got to start praying about it, you got to read the big book about it, you got to talk to your sponsor about it, then you got to inventory it, you got to do all this sort of stuff, try to get this guy Russell off your mind, and then you write down this, he said this, and why does that, you know, then you go through the spiritual axiom, whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the problem is, something wrong with me. You know, but you want to keep on hating me, but you know you can't do that. And then you try to figure it out. You know, he said this and he said that, and that bothered me here and there. And then all of a sudden you get a nugget of truth and say, well, that's right. What am I hating? Because, and then all of a sudden you see something, you say, damn it, he's right. That's the way it is. And all of a sudden you change, you grow, your whole idea and outlook looks different, and something about you changes inside. And all of a sudden I'm not bothering you anymore. As a matter of fact, you say, he says, man, I'll tell you something, that guy was actually right, I shouldn't have been pissed at him. Then you come up to me 6 years later and you say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. This is the way it works. That's the way it works. As long as you don't drink and, you know, you read the book and do the material, it points you towards God, and all of a sudden, you know, you get fed these nuggets that you think are the worst thing in the world, and you start realizing that the stuff you're just lapping up and you're eating up is the stuff that's going to kill you, and the stuff that you're running away from is the healthy stuff. Because that's the next frontier in AA, emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson said our real problem was unhealthy dependencies. And that's what it's all about. After you get past this, you gotta deal with the real alcoholism, which is not only the selfishness and the self-centeredness, but the addiction to the things of this world. The addiction, God only knows, alcoholics aren't the only ones addicted to the things of this world, the cars, the sex, the job, the boss, the money, you know. Everybody's addicted to it. Everybody is so addicted to it that you think it's only normal not to be addicted to it. You think it's the only normal way of living. You walk out of these rooms, the billboards, the movies, the radio, everything that is mirrored around you tells you that if you don't have the car, the bar, the girl, the money, the guy, the husband, the this, the that, the stuff, that there's something wrong with you. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm an alcoholic. And alcoholics are men and women who are restless, irritable, discontent, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And the only thing drinking does is cure the alcoholism for a brief period of time. Because I have that kind of alcoholism that hits you when you're sober. You know, and I never even experienced alcoholism before I came in here. I experienced something called drunk. It's different. Drunk is different than alcoholism. Alcoholism is something you experience sober. I couldn't stand to experience alcoholism before I came in here. When alcoholism used to raise its ugly head, now I didn't know it was alcoholism. It sounded like this. When you know how you knew alcoholism was coming into me? Because I would say something like this. I need a drink. That's when you knew it was coming. I need a drink. I need a drink. Let's get to the bar. I didn't know it was alcoholism. I just knew I needed a drink. You know why I needed a drink? Because I couldn't stand being where I was sober. I couldn't stand life sober. And that's the real alcoholism. Then you come in here, you put the plug in the jug. Now, of course, because you are addicted to alcohol and all sorts of strange things are happening to you, you think alcohol is the problem. That's what you think. You think alcohol is the problem because that's what put you in jail, because you're arrested for DUI, because that's what your wife says or your husband says. You got to drink. So you think drinking is the problem. You come in here, you put the plug in the jug, now everything's going to be okay. Now you're 18 months sober, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you think about your life, you're thinking about yourself, you're thinking about the money, you want to blow your brains out, and you have no idea what's going on. You got 50,000 voices in your mind. They're all saying bad things about you and other people, and you don't know who to call and where to go and what to do because you're crawling out of your skin and you're bored and you're scared and you don't know what to do. And now you're experiencing alcoholism, and you might actually get a glimpse and say, well, now I know why I drank. And unless you can get rid of that stuff, you're going to drink again. Or you're going to be miserable, and who needs that? I don't need to be 14 years or 20 years sober. I'm hanging in there, you know? That crap. I want that thing they promised in the big book, new freedom, new happiness. Experience what you're having, rocket job in the fourth dimension of existence, which I had not even dreamed. That's what I'm after. You know, I don't be lying. You know, that's the deal. And so I'm sort of prejudiced and opinionated because that's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to talk about all the time. Now, I love AA speakers. I've listened to them all my life, and I'm not putting them down. I think they're the greatest in the world. And as you probably know, you may not know this, South Florida, when I say South Florida, I'm talking about Palm Beach County and down, is probably the only part in the United States that has things called step series. You know, there may be other parts that I don't know about, but for the most part, I was surprised to learn, since I was brought up on step series, where old-timers or people who've been around for a while would be invited for a three-month period of time to talk about their experience with the steps and working the steps and living this life, a life of sobriety. And over a period of 12 weeks, they'd almost like a college course or almost like a seminar course or something like that, they would give their experiences in growing up in emotional sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I thought they did this everywhere. I left Dade County one day, and I flew to New York, and I flew to Akron, and I flew to other places. I found out nobody ever heard of this. This is strictly like a South Florida kind of deal. That everywhere else, they're either discussion meetings or somebody gets up and tells their story. And so the only thing the entire United States is used to is you get up here and you talk about drinking. You know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And a lot of times, it's, you spend a lot of time on what it was like. And so you have these great AA stories. And listen, I used to do them. I'd like to think I'm still capable of doing them. You know, spending about 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, a half an hour, 2 hours, or whatever it is on blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Then she told me this, and I drank. And then I drank. And this happened, and then I drank. They're all the same story. They're kind of funny. They're cute. There's a lot of lessons we learned in it. There's identification. I think it's important because people identify with people. And then I drank, and then I drank. And sometimes I say, man, I'm really off the beam. I wonder if I could still do that. I want to, it's not that I've lost it or I'm putting it down or I don't think, but you know, I've got to tell you something. My heart is not there. My heart is not to talk to you about, I mean, I'm going to probably, since it's a step one meeting, this might be the only time that you actually hear a little bit of my story as far as drinking. You're going to have to trust me. I'm not here because I ate too much ice cream. Although that might be a good reason to be here for me. You know, you can tell I've been eating ice cream somewhere, but you know, I'm a drinker. I'm an alcoholic. I came here because, you know, as I was saying this afternoon, I came here when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. And, you know, that happens to alcoholics. You know, alcoholics are that weird creature that no matter how much they hurt people, how much they hurt themselves, how much they drink, how low they get in their lives, they somehow figure out that they're actually better than other people. You know, that they're actually superior to other people, and they're actually doing okay, you know? You have to really get crushed as an alcoholic to even have a semblance of light coming in saying, look, I might have a problem. You know, and I got crushed. And I'll talk a little bit about that. I'm not going to go into a whole drunk log, but what I really want to talk about now and for the next 12 weeks is how to get on that rocket ship ride to the fourth dimension of existence, how to experience much of heaven. I want to talk about emotional sobriety. So most of this stuff is going to be dedicated to that because when you've been around for a while, you know what you experience? And I know there are other people here with time. I've sponsored hundreds of men, hundreds. And I've worked with probably thousands of them. And I've watched people come in and out, men and women. And what happens is when you've been around for 30 years, what you see is you don't see a lot of sobriety. You see a lot of people dying. You see a lot of people failing. You see a lot of people slipping. And you even see, and I sponsor them, men and women who are sober and lonely, sober and bored, sober and scared, sober and mean-spirited, sober but not happy. I'm telling you, you know they say most people live lives of quiet desperation. Most AAers live lives of quiet desperation. And the unfortunate thing is, the good news is we stop drinking. The bad news is there's a lot of people that stop drinking and think that's the end of the story. And they can be satisfied with the fact. And I believe this. My sponsor used to say to me, we need to know this, that no matter what goes on a given day, if you haven't had a drink, you're a success. And I believe that's true. But some people, like most people do, carry it to a farther extreme. And the extreme is settling for, like they say in the six steps, settling for not drinking and missing the banquet. Missing the rocket ship ride in the fourth dimension, missing the new freedom and new happiness. And let me tell you something. I suppose it's a good thing that you don't drink, okay, rather than drinking. But I'll tell you something. To go through your entire life and die and having never gotten to the point where you've realized what they're really talking about in this deal has got to be a sad deal too. In Vision for You, it says the following. I'm going to read this to you. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he is not happy with his sobriety. For he is not happy with his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with or alcohol or without it. Then he will be no loneliness as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. There are many, many people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not drinking but are not happy with their sobriety. And I'm going to tell you something else. I'll tell you something else kind of crazy. They don't even know they're not happy with their sobriety. And many people drink because they're not happy with their sobriety, and they don't realize they're not happy with their sobriety until 5 minutes after they took the first drink. I was talking to, nothing teaches but experience. I was talking to a guy sponsored. He's sober today, and he had about a year. And he went away to Montana, and he was doing very well, making a bunch of bucks. And he took his family away to Montana, and he had a beautiful vacation. Of course, he didn't go to meetings when he was in Montana, and he came back. And I called him up on the phone in his office, and I said, Joe, his name wasn't Joe, but to protect the guilty, I'll say Joe. I said, Joe, hey, welcome back. Let's go to a meeting tonight. He says, no, I don't need to go to a meeting. He said, hey, Joe, you've been away for a week. You know, you've been a week without meetings. Come on, we'll go to a meeting. He says, look, Russ. He says, get off my back. I said, listen, I'm fine. I'm not even thinking about a drink. A drink is the farthest thing from my mind. I don't have any problem. Don't worry about it. I'm okay? You know, just leave me alone. I'm not thinking about a drink. I'm fine. I'll go to a meeting. Don't worry about it. He hung up the phone. 2 hours later, he was drunk. You know when he learned that he wasn't happy with his sobriety? I guess about 2 hours later after he drank. Because, you know, he was on the phone and he was as sincere as you could possibly be. I don't even have a problem. I'm not even thinking about drinking. I don't think he was lying to me. I think that's the insidiousness of this disease. You see, alcoholics think that emotionalism and sincerity mean something. It don't mean squat. No matter how strongly you pound the table and say, I'm not even thinking about drinking, I ain't never going to drink, that is going to last about 5 seconds in this deal. You know, it's not, no substitute with what you really, it's no substitute for what you really need. You know, let me tell you something. Solemn promises, it ain't going to happen, I swear, I'm never going to drink again, don't mean much in here. As a matter of fact, the guys who make the solemn promises, you know, who say, don't worry, I ain't never going to drink again, I know right away they're going to drink. As soon as they say, listen, I want you to think about this. Imagine every time somebody came in here and said the word cucumber. How you doing? My name is Joe. Oh, hey, Joe, how you doing? Cucumber. 5 minutes later, he drinks. You know, you talk to somebody, all of a sudden they mention the word cucumber, and they drink. 300 people say the word cucumber, and as soon as they say cucumber, 5 minutes later, they drink. Now, if your sister got into Alcoholics Anonymous and came up to you and started talking to you, and you had 30 years, and we're having a nice conversation. Isn't AA great? Yeah, he's great. You know, fantastic. And then he said this, cucumber. What would you think? You'd be a little concerned, wouldn't you? Every time I've ever had anybody come up and say, I'm never going to drink again, they drink. Every time I have ever, you think I'm crazy? Well, they must be crazy too. Because you know what they say in this book? I never understood it first until I started experiencing it. It says, now when they're a serious drinker, says, I don't miss it at all. You would think they'd say, isn't that great? You know what they say? We laugh at that. I never understood that. Why would you laugh at somebody who says, don't miss it at all, feel better, look better? They say, we laugh at that. We know he's going to drink again. Somebody says to me, oh, I don't miss it. I ain't never going to drink again. I know he's going to drink again. I know it. Don't even ask me. Why do I know it? Because I've been around for 30 years. And I've seen the guys who say that. I see the attitude. The attitude that they think they've licked it. The cocky attitude that they think they've got under control. The attitude is not an attitude of powerlessness, an attitude of I've got power, I've got control over this thing. The attitude of arrogance. I see the attitude. And I know they're going to drink. I know they haven't gotten it. They haven't figured it out yet. They haven't figured out that they're not in control whether they're going to drink or not. They're powerless over whether they're going to drink or not. It doesn't matter that they feel strongly that they're not going to drink again, or they know they're not going to drink again. None of that means anything. They haven't learned the lesson that they're powerless and they're going to have to drink again. Soon they're going to know loneliness, as few do, because they're not really happy with their sobriety. They're not really happy with anything. Their lips have told me they're not happy. As soon as they say that attitude goes along with that attitude, there's other attitudes that go along with that. That tells me about how they relate to the world and how they relate to you and how they relate to God, which is zero. Because why do they need God? They're in control. They're in control of anything. They're self-sufficient. They're self-sufficient people. They don't need sponsors. They don't need to listen to you. Get off my back. I just came back from Montana. I don't even feel like drinking again. Don't worry, I'll go to a meeting. Just that little statement tells me so much. You know, I learn so much from people, not by what they say, but what they don't say. It's just an amazing thing, this disease, how it hits you. And so when I see people dropping off like flies at 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, people who've been around the program for 30 years, but are, you know, just getting another 20 days or something like that, I know it's because they've never been able to be, I know it's because they're not happy with their sobriety. You know, and that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how to get to the point where you're happy about your sobriety. Because it would be nice, it's always nice to have some people that hang around and actually feel good about being sober. And are grateful about being sober. And feel like on top of the world. And I'm not talking about it in a giddy way, but just feel, you know, just have that deal going on they talk about in the big book. That new freedom, that new happiness. And they're not going to drink again. Because they would never substitute. They would never exchange what they have on the planet now. And it has nothing to do with external things. You know, like most people, I was addicted to the things of this world. You know, to the cars and to the women and to the sex and the money, like the world is. All you have to do is turn on the TV. And you know what the world's addicted to. I mean, the most important thing in the world is, you know, whether you're 50 years old and you can still have an erection. I mean, they got more Viagra commercials. I mean, I guess if you can have an erection, you're 50 or 60 years old, you're on top of the world and you can't, you want to kill yourself. You know, when you live in a world that celebrates that kind of stuff, you know, you're laughing, you think it's a joke. It's not a joke. This stuff is all over the tube, telling people that their self-esteem and their self-respect has to do with how much sex they're having, and whether they can have an erection. And if you don't think that's disgusting, and I'm not saying in like a sexist sort of like prurient way, you know, I got nothing against sex. If you don't think that an entire society built on a value system that elevates whether or not you can have sex above everything else, well, it sort of tells you why we're in the shape we're in right now. Spending more money than we make, you know, chasing after things, worrying about money. And you know something, I've been in AA long enough, whenever I see people, you know, I came in here and for 15 years I was a thumb, and I had good sobriety, and I was still a thumb-sucking crybaby. You know what I mean? And I you come in here, and what do you hear in AA? I mean, 90% of it is group therapy on my mother said this, my father said that, you know, the neighbor did this, the boss did that. I can't believe what happened to me today. It's all a big wine session. And what are they whining about? You ever see here somebody whining about God? You ever see here somebody whining about faith? You ever hear somebody whining about, you know, love for their fellow man or whining about service? No, they're whining about what? Things. They're whining about lack of romance. They're worrying about, they're whining about their car and their self. They're worried about the stuff they're really addicted to. The stuff they're really addicted to, what they're really focused on, what they're really worshiping, and what they're really scared they're going to lose. That stuff, that's what they're really whining about. They're not whining about what they talk about in this book. What do they say in this book when they talk about material things in the seventh step? They say, we're not going to put down material things. And then the next paragraph is, but nobody's made a worse mess of it than us. You know, constantly worrying about these things instead of being concerned with character building and becoming closer to God. See to it. You know what the bottom line in AA is? It's all over. It's written on every page. On every single page it's written. Every page it's written. It's said differently. It's say it a thousand different ways. It's all the same thing. The great fact is this and nothing less. You know what the great fact is? The great fact is they are convinced that their creator lives in their heart. He's a part of them, their creator. He is doing for them what they cannot do for themselves. It says it again in the promises. It says, we see that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You know what it says at the end of the book? It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great things will happen for you and countless others. Which is, quite frankly, a takeoff from something in the Bible, because they were all studying the Bible beforehand. You know, which is, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. That's why where we got Dr. Bob got the saying, first things first. Put God first. When they talk about service to other people in the 12th step, they talk about, should you give a person money? He says the problem with that is they start putting material things before God instead of trusting God. It says, job or no job, wife or no wife. People say they need money. They say, nonsense. Just trust God and clean house. It all depends on your relationship with God. If you don't see that this, see to it, what did we just read today? There is one who has all power. That one is what? God. May you find him now. I think they were serious. You know about the A, B's, and C's? You read them all the time. What are the A, B's, and C's? That we're alcoholic and we cannot manage our own lives, right? Isn't that what it says?
Yeah.
That we're alcoholics and can't manage our own lives. So what do? We go to an AA meeting. You soak up the old AA experience. And then you go outside and what do? You start thinking about how you're going to manage your life. And then you make a little bit of a mess of that deal and get all whiny and everything, come back to an AA meeting and talk about how your life is all messed up, you know, and you have to give it up to God and all that sort of stuff. And then you go out and what do again? Start figuring out how you're going to manage your life. And you do that for about 20 years. And then all of a sudden, one day, you're reading the big book and you say, wait a second, it says I can't manage my own life. But how do I stop? I mean, you figured out how to stop drinking. You haven't figured out. He says no human power could relieve their alcoholism. And all you do is walk around the plant looking for some man or woman or thing that's going to help you, save you from your alcoholism. And what does it say at the very end? God could and would if he were sought. If he were sought, God can do it. Being convinced, we are now ready to step three. Hey, listen, some people aren't convinced until they're 20 years sober. They don't even realize they're doing it. They don't even realize they're still living the alcoholic life. They're still powerless, all this stuff. They're still addicted to things. They don't understand what's going on because they're... Let me tell you something. There are consequences to falling in love with the things of this world. There are consequences, and the consequences is constantly being in fear and anxiety. Those are the consequences of that deal. Constantly being in fear and anxiety. I love what the Apostle Paul says. I've learned to be content in all things. You know, I used to watch these men, you know, rich or poor. I've learned to be content. In this world, you will have problems. Be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. I see these old timers, and they're few and far between. I can tell you that. They're few and far between. And the one thing that I love about these old timers, you could never quite pin down this quality they had, is they're always in the same mood, and it was a good one. Every once in a while, they'd be off a little bit. Basically, you knew that while everybody else was running around with their heads chopped off and going crazy, Joe Snyder was always going to be solid. You know what I mean? You know, they were always even keeled. You know, here's what I thought. I'd see a guy like that and say, well, sure, he must have $1 million in the bank. He must be getting all this. You know, he must be. I thought that if you're really doing that well and you feel that good about yourself all the time, that must mean the external circumstances. And then I'd run into these guys and they were like that and they were dying of cancer. Or they would like that and I'd find out they had no money. But it didn't matter because the external circumstances, because their guidance system, you know, what they thought about themselves and how they related to the world and other people had nothing to do with their external circumstances. And I had everything to do with my external circumstances, which, quite frankly, I had limited or no power to control. And since I have the same corrosive thread that you have running through your life, and that is absolute stark raving fear, I don't know it, fear that something's going to happen to me, and so I have to control everybody. I have to control what you think about me and what your opinions about me. I got to control what you think and what you think and what's going to happen. And when you're into that deal, that means you're thinking about what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tomorrow or how's this going to affect me or what are they going to do and everything like that, because you got to control everything with your mind and have everything in control, because if you don't, something bad's going to happen to you and you're going to get hurt. And I can't tell you what it is, but it's going to be bad. So you got to be in control, and that means you got to be aware and awake and everything like that, and you don't sleep too well, and all sorts of stuff. Every once in a while, you got to have a drink. That's true. But the bottom line is, you know, because you got to be in control. But you want to know something? When you're not scared, you no longer have to be in control. You don't have to control anybody. I don't have to control you. I don't have to worry about what you think about me. I don't have to walk out of this group and say, why did I say and what did I do? You can just be transparent, and you can talk fast. Because you don't have to filter through, you know, what will they say? You don't have to filter it through the bullshit, like, you know, if I say this, what will they think? If I say that, what will I think? You don't have to waste your time thinking about stuff. You don't have to worry about what other people think about. You know, I called up my sponsor. I talked about this today. I called up my sponsor, and I said, you still get resentments? He says, get them. I give them. I couldn't believe it. You know, I know people. I would find out somebody didn't like me. It would ruin my year. You know, what's the old, I talked about it today, the old Marlon Brando thing. If I go in a room and there's 300 people and one doesn't like me, I have to leave. You know, I just can't stand the fact that you may not like me. 3 o'clock in the morning. What did I do to offend you? Okay, I just got to sort of fix it, because everybody's got to love me. And that means you got to be everything to everybody. You got to, I'll prostitute my morals. I'll do anything, you know, snort the cocaine, smoke the dope, you know, steal the money, whatever it is. Just accept me, because if you're an alcoholic, you're a love-me-aholic. You're accept-me-aholic. You're a don't-reject-me-aholic. I'll do anything, you know, just don't be mad at me-aholic. What are they saying about me? What do they say about me? Why do they think that way about me? What a horrible way to live your life. What a horrible way to live your life. You can't even be you. You got to be what everybody, you think everybody wants you to be, and you can never be that good, always worrying about that crap. What a waste of time. So one day my wife says to me, my first wife says to me, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. It was a Friday morning, around 7:30 in the morning. I was about 100 pounds lighter than I am now. I was, 26 years old. I was in my blue pinstripe suit, white shirt, red tie, on my way to the state's attorney's office. I was division chief there, you know, handling murder cases, supervising... a bunch of lawyers and things like that. And I was living in a beautiful house on Miami Beach, you know, on the golf course. Beautiful wife, beautiful son. And she looks at me, and I'm as sober then as I am right now. And she looks at me, and she stares me in the eye, and says, I just want you to know, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. You know, didn't even want to start an argument. It's not to start, it was almost like she was delivering a letter. Just thought you ought to know, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And, I've sort of analyzed that statement, you know, so just a few words. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I don't think there's like any, that's a pretty lean statement. I don't think there's an ounce of fat in that statement. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure you can remove any word in that statement and it would make sense. If there's not a spare word, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And, you know, listen, I graduated with Departmental Honors in Mathematics. I was, National Science Foundation Fellow. You know, I was a pretty smart kid, graduated law school. As a matter of fact, I explained to my first sponsor about all the degrees I had on my wall. I said, look at all my degrees. I was terribly under-sponsored. My sponsor never graduated grade school, and I was looking to be sponsored by Einstein, but unfortunately he gave me this used car salesman. But he had 15 years, you know. I was doing him a favor. And I said, look at all my degrees on the wall. And he says, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. See, that was my real problem. My real problem was I was abused as a sponsor. You know what they say? When the child is abused, he becomes abusive. So if you think I'm abusive, it's because my sponsors abused me. You know, and you know what's the other line he said to me? He says, Russ, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. So my wife says to me, he says, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And now I got in my car and I drove two blocks and I stopped at a light and I said, what the hell she mean by that? Now let me tell you something. You know, I'm gonna promise you something. When people make statements to you like, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. That's sort of like when the judge says, if I see you again, you're going to jail. You know, when they make simple statements like that to you, even though you're smarter than anybody else, and you're more brilliant than the world, and you just haven't been discovered yet, when people make statements to you like, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you, and 5 minutes after that, you're perplexed because you're not sure what they mean. That's a sure indication that you're going to have serious problems in your life thereafter, okay? There's going to be something bad going on in your life. And that's when I learned something about this disease of alcoholism. And what I learned about this disease of alcoholism is when an alcoholic hears or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him. It confuses him. Like, don't spend the money. You know, I was 40, let me tell you, I was 9 years sober before I realized that if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. I went to my sponsor one day because I was making a lot of money and I was always broke. Now, do you understand what I just said? I was making a lot of money and I was always broke. And I went to my sponsor and I said, I've got money problems. I told him I have money problems. He says, well, I've got a solution. You got a solution? He says, yeah, well, I had like about 5 or 6 years, 8 years or something like that. He says, what's the solution? He says, well, he says, the way you handle money problems like this, he says, you either spend less or make more. Well, I couldn't spend any less and I couldn't make any more. So I said, well, like, what's my third option? And you know what the third option is? You live off of somebody else's money. You live a dishonest life. Because you're addicted to things of this world. So you charge and charge and charge and lose other people's money and you go bankrupt and you become a thumb-sucking crybaby and you go to AA meetings and you complain about not having money and stuff like that. And it's all because of selfishness and all because you're addicted to the things of the world. And because you're addicted to the things of the world, even though people tell you simple ways of getting around it, you can't see it because they're telling stuff you don't want to hear, so it confuses you. Because you have that other addiction. It's not to alcohol, it's alcoholism. It's addiction to the world. You know, it's just as bad as, yeah, it just hits you in another place, a different way. Alcoholism just, you know, it just takes a different form. You just, then you run head, it's like everything else with booze. You run headlong into reality. When you spend more money than you make, you just run headlong into reality. Then one day you go bankrupt, you lose everything. And all of a sudden you say, maybe, now I get it. And you learn how to drive in older cars. You learn how to live without credit cards. And all of a sudden you become brilliant. I don't know how this thing works. You just hang around long enough and you don't drink. You learn a lot of crap about a lot of problems that you have, a lot of defects, a lot of things that you don't want to give up, a lot of old ideas. A lot of people that you used to hate because they tell you to do things that you didn't want to do because you wanted to run your life. You know, but you didn't understand how come you keep on being unhappy and everything like that. Because and the people that you go up to try to help you would tell you all sorts of stupid things like give up the car or something stupid, you know. You know, stay away from the girl or whatever it is. They'd always tell you things that you didn't want to do that were stupid things. That had nothing to do with drinking. It had everything to do with drinking. It had everything to do with alcoholism. And so, you know, I mean, that's what she said to me. And so I went to the bar and I got there at 4:30. I sat next to my drinking buddy, Doug, and I said, you know, I can only have one drink. I can only have one drink. And he said, why? He says, no, Ronnie told me, he says, if I come home drunk, she's going to leave me. It's not that I forgot it. I didn't forget it. You know, she says, come home drunk. So I can only have one drink. He says, Russ, she loves you. She's crazy about it. She's never going to, no, she meant it. She meant to me. So I had my one drink. It was a double scotch. I was 5 years sober before I realized I was always already on two with my first drink. I had a double scotch. He poured me a double, and I went whack. Because that's the way I drank. I drank fast. As a matter of fact, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, what they said to me is they didn't think I drank too much. They think I drank too fast. Because I drank for the effect. I wasn't going to be hungry. I wanted to get right up and I wanted to like rock. I really wanted to take that rocket ship into freedom. You know, I wanted to get there like that. You know, let me tell you something. It's like Pavlovian. I used to get the effect from booze driving up to the bar. Driving up to the bar, I'd start feeling better. As the car was pointed in the direction of the bar, I started feeling better. You know, just mentioning, let's go get a drink. I'm feeling better already. You know what I mean? I sit there at the bar, you know, and I'd order two or three drinks because you never want to break the rhythm. If you're an alcoholic, the worst thing in the world is to break the rhythm. There's a certain rhythm to drinking. It goes like bam, 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 bam. You can't go bam, bam. Where's the bartender? You know, you can't do that stuff. That's a bad deal. That's horrible. You got to keep on drinking and drinking. And the next thing I know, they brought me home. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, drunk. And the next thing I know, the next day, I was kicked out of my house. And as I was hitting the bricks and losing my house and my wife and everything that should have been important to me, if you had asked me what the problem was, I would have said, she didn't understand me. We were different people. She was trying to change me and believed it to be true. Believed it to be true. 3 years later, I didn't think I had a drinking problem. Hey, you know, the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. Right? You know, I didn't know I had an alcohol problem. 3.5 years later, when I was 6 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm driving back from Palm Beach with my sponsor. We're talking about getting divorced. He told me how he got divorced. It had something to do with this. His wife apparently said to him, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. He came home drunk, she left, and I said, that's what happened to me. I didn't think drinking had anything to do with my divorce. It was exact. She didn't say, if you don't stop hanging around here, if you don't start paying more attention. She could have said all that stuff. She said, if you don't stop drinking, come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I came home drunk, she left me. It was exactly, it had everything to do with my divorce. And you know something? It's because I was powerless over it. Because, you know, when I stood up to that bar and I knew that she said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Everything that was important to me or should have been important to me was right up there on the line. And all I had to do was make it home sober. That's all I had to do, make it home sober. And, you know, the deal is the day before that, or maybe the week before that, or maybe the year before that, I may have been able to have that one drink, slugged it down, and make it home sober, but not that night. Because I had crossed over that invisible line that they say we cross over, where once I took that first drink, no matter how important it was, I could never safely predict where that drink was going to take me. And it took me until 3 o'clock in the morning when they carried me home, and that was the end of my marriage. And I continued to drink it until I was 31 years old in December, late December, when I had lost everything. And I ain't even talking about the material things, because the material things they are so unimportant. I mean, the material things are important only because they bring us to a spiritual place. Because when you're in love with money, and when you're in love, if you're a man, with women or with sex or with romance, what happens is when your whole life revolves around those things, no matter how far down the scale you go, no matter what kind of scummy thing you become, if you have a gal or you have some money, you can somehow live with yourself, even though it's a crummy existence. But when all the underpinnings of what your personality is and who you are taken away and they're stripped away and you're just left with you, and there's only you in the mirror, you understand what I'm saying? And you die there physically and spiritually, and you're just looking at you, at that point, it's like, who are you kidding? And I had lost everything, including probably the most important thing, my self-respect and my self-esteem. You know, so when I say to you, I came to AA when the consequences of my drinking came at me fast and my ability to lower my standards, I couldn't lower my standards fast enough to make me feel good as to what I had become. I was ashamed of myself, and I looked the man in the eye and I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I didn't say I'm powerless over alcohol, my life has become unmanageable, which is pretty much the idea. I looked the man in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. A week before that, I probably would have said I needed help. I needed money or I needed a girlfriend or something. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. He said, Russ, you never have to feel this way anymore. And you never have to drink again if you don't want to. And I didn't want to. It was a short time after that, in January, that I picked up a white chip in an Alcoholics Anonymous and never found it necessary to have a drink after that. Never lost the fear of drinking. Now, I don't fear drinking today. And at the same time, and I can't explain this to you, I haven't had a drink in 30 years, be 31 years in January, and I don't think about drinking, I don't worry about drinking, I'm not saying I'm going to drink or anything like that, but I cannot explain it to you. You know, the good news is in here there doesn't require much explanation because there are other people that understand what I'm talking about, but somehow I know in the back of my mind I can be drunk in a half an hour. I know I have absolutely no control over that, and there are going to be people here, and people are going to say, well, that's bullshit. I don't understand that. You know, obviously, you have control over it. And I said, no, I'm not sober because of me. I'm not sober because I can control it. It's a God thing. It's because of my relationship with God. I have no desire to drink. Because I know that if I lose that relationship with God, I lose the relationship I have with God today, I know the stuff will start crowding in on me. I'll start getting restless, irritable, discontented. I'll start feeling bad about myself. And then You know, maybe it won't start with the drinking. Sometimes the drink is the last. Drink happens at the end of the slip. Maybe it'll start with the yelling or the screaming or the feel sorry for myself, because I am a self-pityaholic, too. I haven't found it necessary to feel sorry for myself in a long time. Snippets here and there. But, you know, really, not to feel sorry for myself for a long time. My mother was constantly drinking and feeling sorry for themselves. Anything that happened on the planet around me was worth feeling sorry for yourself and sucking your thumb and pour me a drink and being a victim. You know, when I lose my relationship with God, it's just a short period of time before I start feeling sorry for myself, sorry for my situation, looking at myself in a bad light, looking like a victim, getting mad, getting angry, getting depressed. And man, I'll tell you, it's a short jump after that. Maybe it won't even start with the booze. Maybe it'll start the way it starts for most people with over 10 or 20 years. Maybe it'll just be a prescription pill. Maybe it'll just be a couple of aspirin, or maybe it'll be just be a Tylenol 3 or an Advil or something like that. Maybe I'll go to the doctor, get some Xanax, you know, to clear me up or something like that. Maybe I'll just start popping pills. I'll just start chewing my booze or something like that, because I'm not happy with my sobriety. I'm convinced it's some sort of chemical imbalance. You know what I mean? Some sort of Valium deficiency or something, because I'm doing the steps. And, you know, I'm not going to talk because I have no relationship with another human being. I have no relationship with God. Maybe that's the way it'll work out, because I won't be happy with my sobriety. You know, so this first step is a tricky little devil, I'll tell you what. And I can't tell you how to do it. I love people who say they got all sorts of, I guess they have all sorts of, whether sponsors give out assignments. Yeah, my assignment is, you know, a guy says, well, I don't know about this drinking thing. I don't think I'm powerless. I said, you ought to go out and, you know, drink some more. Well, yeah, I mean, you may think I'm crazy, but, you know, the old timers, they knew the deal. They didn't waste time with people. That's what it says in the 12 and 12. He says, we don't argue. It's this trial of John Barleycorn. You know, I mean, I don't know. Every alcohol, don't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. Everybody's got to drink their last drink. Yeah, you know, you say to me this. You say, yeah, but they may die. I say, well, yeah, you know, well, alcoholics pretty much about as common as dirt, you know. They may die. That's true. And they may learn the lesson. They may live. You know, but drinking, hey, listen, alcohol is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. If it wasn't for alcohol, I wouldn't be here. That's the thorn. That's the godly thorn he gave me. Man, you know, if I wasn't an alcoholic, I'd be them. I mean, you have people in here, and they wish they were them. I mean, I'm not putting them down. They're nice. They're out there. They're walking around, home to work. You know, they're nice people. You know, but, I mean, I'd be them. Get involved, sort of like in the same stuff we're involved. We're in about the same stuff we're involved in. Living lives of loneliness and discontentedness and everything like that, focusing on the stuff that we're focusing on. You know, I mean, I guess they have a little bit up front us because it never gets that bad for them. They don't want to maybe blow their brains out or, you know, drink themselves to death, whereas we do. You know, we can't live that life. They can live that life, but who wants that life? When we can come in here because of this program and because of God's work in our lives and live extraordinary lives, you know, not ordinary lives, but extraordinary lives. And experience much of heaven, be rocketed in the fourth dimension. This is the greatest thing. Man, if you're an alcoholic, you should be down on your knees and say, thank you, God, for making me an alcoholic. It's the greatest thing. Where else should go? Everywhere on the planet. Everywhere I go, I've been to so many. I just came back off 2.5 week vacation, almost about 4 or 5 different states and counties and cities, going to AA meetings, meeting friends and people I know all over the country. Earth people don't have this deal. It's incredible. Thank you very much. God bless you.
My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Robert. I'm the North Miami group of Alcoholics Anonymous.